and slip through the cracks. No one has a change and it's f***ing up my head. But now I know the reason why I had to buy the thread. Cause there's a hole in the bucket. Dear Liza. There's a hole.
Good evening. You are tuned into your community radio, KBOO, 90.7 FM on your dial, and you are listening to Hole in the Bucket, a KBOO show on housing, homelessness, and poverty. And we have an exciting show tonight. We're going to be talking about families and children experiencing homelessness, what that experience is like, and what we can do about it, what we as listeners can do to help provide the stability of home to more people in our community. But we'd like to start out with our homeless headlines, and let me introduce my co-host. I think I forgot to say my own name. I'm Michael Anderson, and my co-host is Jay Thiemeyer.
How are you doing? First item of news is Multnomah County Health Department has unveiled its new mobile medical clinic, which will deliver primary care services to homeless families and individuals throughout the county. Funding for the van and its medical services was provided by Kaiser Permanente, United Way, the county, and a federal grant from HRSA, the Health Resources and Services Administration. The mobile clinic will stop at various sites over the week, including Albina Ministerial Alliance, Friendly House, Community Transitional School, Portland Impact, Human Solutions, JOIN, and the Salvation Army's Harbor Lights. Information about this can be obtained at the Westside Clinic, part of the County Health Department, at 503-988-5140.
The Oregon Housing Alliance turns out supporters and builds support for more affordable housing at a June 1st hearing. The Oregon State Legislature's Interim Joint House and Senate Revenue Committees held the second of two hearings about affordable housing on June 1st down in Salem. Housing providers, bankers, government officials, poverty advocates, and impacted citizens all gave strong testimony in support of the Housing Alliance's 2007 Housing Opportunity Agenda, which would provide $100 million in needed funding for housing for working families, seniors, and people with disabilities. The hearing room was packed, with Housing Alliance members and supporters standing on the back and on all sides, and with more people filling an overflow room. The hearing lasted a little over 4 hours, with the themes that housing is increasingly out of reach for regular, everyday Oregonians, that we know what we need to do, that we have the tools to build housing that works for people even at the lowest incomes, and that this $100 million housing opportunity agenda is the first step that the legislature can take to increase housing opportunity in Oregon. To find out more about the Housing Alliance, go to www.OregonHousingAlliance.org.
Speaking of impacted, here's this contradictory legislation from the Congress. On the one hand, the VA has announced a transitional housing loan program designed to help homeless vets. The program will provide up to 15 loans totaling up to a mere $100 million for multifamily housing with supportive services. On the other hand, last week, conferees in the House and the Senate reached agreement on H.R. 4939, the Supplemental Appropriations Bill funding hurricane relief, military operations in the Middle East, border security, and avian flu preparedness. The bill agreed upon in Congress included roughly $20 billion for hurricane aid, including $6 billion for FEMA. However, the bill agreed upon in conference did not include $200 million for Section 8 housing assistance, including assistance for 4,500 units of supportive housing. No funding dedicated to supportive housing was included in the conference version of the bill.
More questionable news from our federal government. The U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness successfully lobbied against a resolution to assist homeless children, youth, and families. Intensive lobbying by the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness led to tabling of a resolution that expanded HUD's definition of homelessness at a meeting of the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Las Vegas on June 3, 2006. The resolution was offered by Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich, who was joined by 27 other mayors and endorsed by over 90 national, state, and local organizations. Mayor Bedick's resolution called upon HUD to expand its definition of homelessness to include people who are sharing the housing of others due to the loss of housing, economic hardship, or other similar reasons, and those who are staying in motels because of the lack of alternative accommodations. The resolution urged HUD to adopt a definition of homelessness that matches the reality of homelessness among families and youth and is similar to definitions used by the U.S. Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the U.S. Department of Justice. The Interagency Council of Homelessness Director, Philip Mangano, argued against the resolution, asserting that labeling people who are doubling up as, quote, homeless would be stigmatizing and that it would overwhelm the HUD homeless assistance budget, dilute current efforts to address, quote, chronic homelessness, and interfere with 10-year plans to, quote, end homelessness. Mangano also contended that people voluntarily sharing housing should not be considered homeless, thus demonstrating that he had either failed to read, understand, or willfully misrepresented the resolution, which expressly referred to people living doubled up or in hotels due to the loss of housing, economic hardship, and similar reasons.
This from the 2006 Homelessness Fact Sheet for Portland and parenthetically the U.S., prepared by Keith Van for the BHCD and Portland's 10-year plan to end homelessness today. Over the course of a year, 17,500 people on average will experience homelessness in Multnomah County alone, including nearly 2,000 youth. On any given night, between 4,500 and 6,000 people may be homeless in Portland. Since 1999, the number of homeless Americans has steadily increased. Over the past 3 years, homeless agencies across the country have reported that alarming numbers of families with children are requesting services. Comprising half of the nation's homeless families with children are the fastest growing segment. Since single adult males are no longer the predominant face of homelessness. As to family and gender characteristics, Keith Van notes in Portland that 39% of Portland's reported homeless population are families with children. 37% are single male adults. 4% of Portland's homeless are unaccompanied youth. And 13% of Portland's homeless families are headed by teen parents. Alarming figures. This is an extensive report. I'm only quoting a few capsule items that Keith Van, who is a friend of the show, has come up with, and he's still revising it. We'll have more about this in the future.
But that does serve as an excellent segue for tonight's show. And it's interesting. I've used words like excited and excellent on a subject that's frankly very somber and depressing. But I guess the reason that we do this show is because we think, however painful the truth might be, that this is a forum where we like to explore the truth, try to get a better understand it, and when that truth is painful, figure out what we need to do to come to terms as a community and deal with it. And so in that light, we're very pleased tonight to, in the studio, be joined by Suzanne Washington, who works with Portland Impact and the Homeless Families Coalition. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi there.
And then we should also have, via telephone, Donna Bolt from the Oregon Department of Education. Are you here, Donna?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you very much. And as well as Kristen Ludwig from the Community Action Organization in the Hillsborough School District. Good evening, Kristen.
Hi there.
Great. Well, I'm happy to have you all here. This is, I think this is the first show that Jay and I have done where we've had two guests coming in remote via telephone. So it's something new. And luckily with our trusty engineer, Orion Gray, who we never quite give the props to, we're sure that this is going to be seamless. But so getting into the subject, I want to start. Jay just shared with us a number of statistics. I'm going to focus on a couple more numbers. But then what I'm really hoping with the three of you tonight is to get a better understanding for our listening audience, what exactly is going on out there that we're seeing this rapid increase of homelessness among families and families with children, and exactly what that means for their lives. So again, a little bit more context. These are numbers from the Oregon Department of Education that we, right now in Oregon, we have approximately 12,000 homeless children and youth enrolled in our schools each year. And this number is very likely low because many of the students and families in this situation are very good at trying to be discreet and to hide the what they're experiencing. Also, we know that only 70% of schools report. When you add this 12,000 number to the 5,000 preschool age homeless children, and then another 10,000 unenrolled unaccompanied minors, we have an astounding 27,000 kids without homes here. And again, this is a conservative number in our state. When we look at Multnomah County, again, the picture is quite frightening. We have 2,193 school-age kids here in Multnomah County, according to in fall 05, that are homeless. Another 548 of school-age kids that are not in school, and then over 18,000 children under 4 years of age. Again, just a shocking total of 4,500 homeless children in Multnomah County. So, boy, those numbers are really overwhelming. And I guess what I would start out is for our guest tonight, what's going on here? Why are we seeing all these families with children not having a place to call home? Why don't we start with Suzanne, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I think Portland Impact is a social service agency, and we've been working with families for many, many years. And three of the biggest things we've been seeing are that have increased the numbers of families. The cost of housing continues to go up. The cost of housing goes up. The cost of child care goes up. The cost of energy goes up, so utilities, lights. And then we have more and more single parents. So I think if you look at the combination of all of the factors together, we end up with more families with children that can't afford to live in a home. They can't afford the rent. They can't afford the cost of the utilities. And if you add the cost of childcare, there's just not enough money. A lot of the families are working poor, working hard, working two jobs, single parent working two jobs, two parents working two and three jobs, and the wages are so low they just can't afford the rent. And I think that is one of the biggest issues is, as we see in Portland, the cost of housing continues to rise, and it has just outpaced the amount of money people can make. And so I think that those issues combined, they keep affecting families more than any single other population.
Kristen, do you want to talk about the situation in Washington County? Is it similar to Multnomah County?
Yes, and I wanted to agree with what Suzanne said, because it's really important to see how the cost of rent, how it's connecting to the real estate boom. Here in Washington County, the real estate is offering windfalls to the upper income folks, and what that does is translates into hardship for folks with lower income. So we're seeing a growing gap between those who have and who have not. Recently, I met a family that had lived in a duplex, and they were paying $600 a month rent, and that was something that they could afford. One of the parents worked in landscaping, and the mother did childcare in their home. Well, they were given a 30-day no-cause eviction because the owner of the duplex knew that he could ask them to leave, he could spend a little bit of money to do some renovation, and then charge $800 or $900 a month rent. And so it was quite sad for this second grade girl because her school that she attends in Hillsboro butts up against some lots of new housing developments they started $250,000 right by the school. And she said to her parents, well, why don't we just buy one of these houses and then I wouldn't have to move? And that is a pretty sad reality that we're seeing more and more. The market rate is for a two-bedroom is about $700 now in Washington County. So that leads to families having to survive in an economic way by finding alternate places to live. So that can lead to living in unheated garages. We see people living in the backyards in sheds. People sometimes live in tents. They sofa surf, stay different places with folks, and in shelters and in motels. But more often than not, we see families that you were talking about, that definition that HUD won't accept, doubling up with other families because they can't find or afford housing. And that has a tremendous impact, it can, on children and their education.
And it sounds like we may have momentarily lost Donna. So
okay.
I want to stick on this. You know, one of the things that Suzanne mentioned is that we're seeing an increase in single parent families, and I'm interested in understanding that dynamic a little bit. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Yes, the cost of childcare. I mean, if you think about somebody who is a single parent, who the message that we have in this country is you get rewarded for hard work. So someone, you know, schlepping their body every day to Taco Bell, who doesn't have a car, who's taking the bus for a couple hours, has to take their kids on the bus to the child care provider. There's not a whole lot left, in terms of just having the energy to do anything more than survive. And unfortunately, what we see is that folks have their personal and social networks they shrink, and sometimes people feel pretty isolated, and kids, we know that about 40%, and I know Donna has these numbers, but about 40% of families that are in homeless situations have children under the age of 5, and so the pressures are greater on single parents with younger children. Their needs are greater, and the stressors are can be greater as well.
It sounds like we have a little bit more trouble with Donna then, but this is really great information. I think, Suzanne, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I think what has happened and what we've seen is that for single parents, if you compare families with children and single parents with children versus a single adult, what they're saying, it's for a livable wage, to earn a livable wage, it's just over $12 in Multnomah County.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to make $12 an hour as a single adult, and that means you can afford your rent, you can afford transportation and food and utilities, and that's pretty tight, what that increases to for a family of three is over $22 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a single mom, you've got two kids, or a single dad and you've got two kids, and you only can find a job that you're making $8, $9 an hour, there is no way you can cover the rent, transportation, child care, all the things that you need to be able to keep yourself housed and keep your children housed.
Yeah, and the situation is really dire for nonprofits like Portland Impact and Community Action. We're sort of the first responders, wouldn't you agree, Suzanne?
Yes.
When families find themselves in crisis, and so we get a volume of probably 500 to 600 people every week who need rent assistance, and the reality, the grisly reality, is that we have the ability to serve about 15 or 20 of those. So we're looking at how we provide those services in terms of fairness. Is it, do you go to a lottery where people know that there's a consequence? It's any way you distribute it, only a limited number are going to get that assistance.
And I think that's a key issue, because there just isn't enough prevention dollars. We're talking a lot of people who are in a home. They have a situation where they have a roof over their head. They have an eviction notice for one reason or another, or they just can't cover the rents, so they do have an eviction notice. And we're the same way here in Multnomah County. We can only serve a very small percentage of those folks and keep them from being evicted. Once they're evicted, then it's all that much harder, because they are doubling up with somebody, which is very hard on children. If you move 1 week you're with one family, the next week you're in another family, you're bouncing around. Kids do not do well in school. A lot of times they don't make it to school that day. So that the not for the government to say that doubled up doesn't count as homeless, it's really a huge disservice to children.
Absolutely.
And I think we really need to get, again, better advocacy with the government. I know we're all doing it, but at some point they have to hear the message that if we do continue to ignore our children, they are the next population of chronic homeless in their definition. And I think that's where our 10-year plan in this area falls short. that the priority is on single adults, and not that they shouldn't, and they don't have needs and shouldn't get resources. I totally think that they should, but we need families. We need to prioritize children at least equally, not less than, so that we make sure we're dealing with kids today and they are not our next future group of homeless people.
And I want to come back to this issue about the 10-year plan, because I think that's something that our listeners could use some clarity on. But I think, first of all, I want to welcome Donna. Are you back with us now?
Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you for your patience. So we have just heard about Multnomah County, and then in Washington County, in a smaller town, suburban environment, about what the realities are that are driving more families to be without homes. And I'm wondering if perhaps you could talk just a little bit at what you see in terms of trends at the statewide level, particularly in rural areas. Is this a problem that's impacting small-town Oregon the same way it is here in the metro area?
Oh, yeah. And proportionately, too. Over half of the school districts in Oregon are under 2,500 people in total population. Those are U.S. Census figures. And the that would make over 100 school districts in that category. And you might have a school enrollment for the whole city as only 500 students. It could fit in one or two buildings. And if 5% of their population is homeless, then they may have more per capita homelessness than a city like Portland, which does have bigger concentrations of people in other income levels.
One question that has always been interesting to me in terms of some of the challenges that you would find in a rural area, as much as, you know, when we went through the homeless headlines and we talked about Phil Mangano talking about the, quote, stigma of homelessness. The reality is there absolutely is a stigma. The way he was using that was in a disingenuous way. But one of the things that's interested me about rural areas is, for better for worse, and in a lot of cases it's worse, as a family you can get lost in a city. In a rural area, I don't think that's quite as true. But do you have any comments about that in terms of what are, you know, we have some shelters, not enough here in Multnomah County, not enough in Washington County, but do they have similar things in rural communities, and what are these families doing to get by?
You're right. The shelters are mainly in the urban areas, and families do tend to be in the doubled-up category more often in the rural areas, as well as in some of those tin can trailers with no electricity and no running water. Some people pay city rents for those one-bedroom trailers in the rural areas because housing is very expensive there, too, and it's not being created as fast and affordably as it needs to be for the growing populations. So, quite definitely in the rural areas, they have fewer services available to provide for these kids. And I might also want to add that, you know, the people that play the host family, a lot of times that's an impoverished family as well, or one that's been through homelessness before, or they're low income too, and they are being very generous because they know what it's like. And those host families are some of the brightest angels we have on the planet right now. I think their generosity is unparalleled.
I would agree.
I would agree, and I would also add that often when families go to live with another family and they're not on the rental contract, there's this sense that they have to be even more invisible. Sometimes they feel like they have to leave early and come in late so the property manager doesn't see them, and that living in the shadows as well, I think, has a negative impact because the family knows that they can be in jeopardy themselves by having another family live with them.
I'd like to introduce another item from Keith Vann's homelessness fact sheet. And I'll quote, nearly 4 million people are homeless in the United States, including 1.5 million children. An additional 6.5 million Americans are doubled up with other families, sleeping on floors, occupying vehicles, and living in motel rooms. These so-called precariously housed folks also have no place to call home. And these are the people that Philip Mangano was not including among his homeless calculations.
So let's open that subject up a little bit. We're going to take a musical break in a couple minutes now, but let's talk about this 10-year plan, because it's called the 10-year plan and homelessness. Communities around the country have it, and Suzanne, as you've intimated, it's doing some important things. It's addressing some needs that have definitely been underserved. But is it fair to call it a 10-year plan to end homelessness?
Well, in my opinion, it's not. It may be fair to call it a 10-year plan to end chronic single homelessness, but I don't think it does enough to address the needs of children. And if we don't do that now, then they are our next group of homeless.
Would it be safe to say that they conveniently ignore at segments of the homeless population that don't fit their formula, which is basically addressed to these chronic single homeless who take up most of the resources?
I think so. And I think in fairness to the city and the county here and people who are making the 10-year plans, there is definitely a mandate from the government to address chronic homelessness. And in their definition, that does not include children. So I think we tried in this city to balance that and get some priority of kids in that and families. But the government, like as you talked about earlier, they don't want to acknowledge that it's a problem, and they don't want to acknowledge the doubled up faction, and that is a lot of families, that they're the hidden homeless. They're not in the businessman's doorway. They are doubled up. And if we don't acknowledge that in the definition of homelessness, then it's hard to create a 10-year plan. However, I think we as a community need to say, no, it's more important than what the government says. We need to say families with children are important. We have to do more for those. They do have a small piece of the 10-year plan, but again, it has to be something we as a community say it's not enough and we need to do more.
Yeah, well, after all, these are the folks with no child left behind. So,
well, speaking of children left behind, one other thing from this fact sheet, quote, one in every 12 persons who become newly homeless is a youth aging out of or running away from foster care. That's a terrifying figure in itself.
It sure is.
And I do think in this city, anyway, we are addressing youth, the 18, 19, even 24-year-old. We do have more resources than we do for children going into the youth system, which is a good thing. And I think that it needs to all be looked at together and not single out any one population.
Or make them contend with each other.
Exactly.
So let's briefly talk about in Washington County and then a little bit from the statewide perspective, because there's 10-year plans there as well. Are you seeing, we do have some excellent attention in Multnomah County to try to broaden the definition. Are we seeing that out in Washington County and around the state?
Well, I'm not involved in those conversations much in terms of policy, but my colleagues here at Community Action, as well as other service providers in the housing world, are very much planful, and we are looking at one of the underserved populations, which is those unaccompanied youth, and we have received a grant to the Boys and Girls Aid Society. We'll be providing a teen shelter, which is sorely needed, and some of the other initiatives are around the Bridges to Housing, which I think you're going to be speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
And but we have I don't know if this is the time to talk about it, but we do have a funding crisis in terms of the shelters, the sheltering system here in Washington County. There are four shelters. One is the Good Neighbor Center, which is in Tigard. It has 50 beds. There's the Community Action Family Shelter, where I'm at right this moment, in Hillsborough, 20 beds. Family Bridge Interfaith Hospitality Network, which is a system where churches open their doors for families to stay for a week, and then they move every week for about 5 weeks. They can serve, they have 12 beds. And then Monica's House, which is the Domestic Violence Resource Center, and it has 28 beds for women and children escaping violence in their homes.
And it's really that few shelter beds for the whole county.
It's 110 beds, uh-huh. And so that means that about one out of 10 of folks who find themselves homeless that are families will be served. We also take part in the one night shelter count in this county, like everyone in the state. And the in January, the homeless count here in Washington County said that we had about 1,100 homeless individuals, and 3,346 of those were children. So housing insecurity is increasingly a family experience. What we're looking at right now is the reality of the public safety levy that failed. Voters did not pass it in 2004, so it's up again for consideration, and it includes the categories of public corrections, gang outreach, some probation, the youth probation department as well, but it also includes the family shelters. And so we're going to have about 90,000 shortfall in funding. And I can talk about what the community is, I can wait till after the musical break and talk about what we're planning to do as a community to bridge that funding gap.
Yeah, and definitely that's an issue that we want to go back as we talk about what we in the listening audience can do. So you're listening to KBOO FM 90.7 on your dial. We are going to take a brief musical break here. We're going to listen to Gil Scott-Heron talking about We Got to Save the Children.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. Problem.
children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children.
Welcome. Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket. Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket.
Ooh. Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket. That was Gil Scott-Heron, Save the Children. So we're joined in the studio tonight by Suzanne Washington with Portland Impact and the Homeless Families Coalition, Donna Bolt, the Oregon Department of Education, and Kristen Ludwig with the Community Action Organization.
Tonight's topic, this is Jay Thiemeyer with Michael Anderson, your co-host, and tonight's topic is homeless families and children. We would like to focus now on the 10-year plan to end homelessness. How real is this? And I'd like to ask Donna Bolt if you could talk about the 10-year plan, how it relates to what you all are trying to do, please.
Well, since I'm working mostly with school districts that are trying to assist families and youth who are homeless, then I'm seeing the 10-year plan as separating or trying to pit one group of homeless people against another in the chase after funding and housing. And I'm seeing on the horizon more and more homeless people. I think Susanna was mentioned that we're sort of growing the next generation of homeless people while we're waiting around for the 10-year plan to help the older folks. And we're cultivating our own yard. I told Michael the other day, it's like we're filling up the bathtub, but we've got the bathtub plug in, but then we start bailing out the water to try to, you know, remove the water. But until we turn the tap off, the bathtub is going to keep overflowing. And then we find out the bucket that we're using, there's a hole in the bucket, you know, just to bring it all around.
Speaking of the tub not being big enough, I'm interested in, you know, the causes like condoization, gentrification, displacement because people anticipate landlords anticipate development, so they up the rents. People who have been long term renters are pushed out, and other causes. Could you address some of the causes that you see specifically?
Me, Donna?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I was just in Bend area the other day up in Central Oregon, and they were talking about these trailer parks. And because of all of the new housing for affluent people that's being built in that area, it's come to a point where the land that trailer park is on is actually quite much more valuable than the standing trailers that are on it. And most of the trailers are unsuitable to be moved. And the tenants there have to pay to have their trailers, their homes, demolished. They have to pay $3,000 a piece. They're already so low income, they're living in fragile old trailers.
Which can't be resold.
Yes. I mean, we're creating our own homelessness by decisions like that.
That's unreal.
Washington County, there's a huge trailer park that has a lot of elderly, and the land is so valuable that the person who owns it has been able to withstand selling it, but now he's going ahead, and so there are a lot of community partners that are working to make the transition the easiest as possible. Department of Aging Services. They're having meetings with the residents and talking about options. Unfortunately, there are a few.
I'd like to ask Suzanne. There were you were mentioning something about these smaller segments like disabled folks and whoever who are not being addressed by the 10-year plan. And I was wondering if you had some comments that you wanted to make.
Well, the 10-year plan does address disabled folks, I think, if they're chronically homeless, if they fit the definition of chronically homeless. So, again, single people. There is an effort underway to with families, again, through the Bridges to Housing program, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit, about how to address folks with disabilities, some special needs that they need more time at an affordable rate to stay in housing. So I think we can get into that. One of the things I wanted to mention that is one of, I don't know if it's a cause, but it's certainly not helping folks get out of homelessness, is how we have the state and the government through the state provides welfare, what we used to call welfare, and we call it TANF, which I couldn't even tell you what TANF means right
now. Temporary Assistance to Needy Families.
Thank you. I couldn't think of it. And it needs to be part of the system that there it is for the whole state, for the whole country. We need to look at some of the systems that keep families down, and I think one of them is that assistance. For example, if you are a mom, dad, single parent, or two-parent, and you are getting assistance from the state, you're working a minimum wage job, you know, you are homeless, they're helping you, you get a, as soon as you get a job, you're penalized. So if I say penalized because if I'm working a minimum wage job and I get a 50-cent an hour raise trying to get to the point that I can make enough money to take care of my entire family, a 50-cent raise if I'm making $7.50 an hour or an $8 an hour isn't going to cover my family of three. But when I get that 50% raise, then the state is going to reduce the amount of help they're going to give me. So it just keeps people in a hole, and talk about hole in the bucket. And we really need to look at the broader systems that, again, are affecting families. So instead of helping that family over the long term make a livable wage, get to the point that they can take care of their own family and get off the state completely, we penalize them for working hard, getting a job, but now we're not going to give you money for childcare. So that 50 cents that I just got in a raise, if it's my family, I just lost a dollar in childcare. So I am 50 cents off, worse off than I was before that. And I think those are the kind of things we need to, that really affect families more than anybody else. Because you do have to pay childcare. You do have to pay transportation to get your kids to school or to get yourself to the job. And every time you make a little bit more, not enough to take care of your family yet, so you still need help, but you actually lose instead of gain.
You begin to wonder where the line is between irresponsibility by the Congress and downright cruelty. The refusal to fund child care, the work requirement rather than promoting parents as scholars, as it's called, people going to school to get out of the cycle of poverty and to get a secure situation to guarantee a future for their children. TANF seems to be one of those things that locks people into poverty. Sort of gives them false hope.
It really is not it doesn't give a lot of incentive, I think, for people to continue to struggle, because you do get that kind of penalty every time you get a little bit better off. You've actually lost, and I think families are frustrated because they're trying to do the right thing. People are working hard, trying to do the right thing, trying to take care of your own families, but you just keep hitting your head against a wall.
I'd like to chime in about a program that's assisted housing dollars that can assist. I don't know what the capacity is to serve folks, but today I heard of a woman who has a single woman, no children, who's been living in her car for 3 years. She was pretty hesitant to go into a sheltering situation, felt more safe within her car, and the police would routinely go through her possessions and look for contraband, that kind of thing. She got into a job training program, received some mental health services, and was able to connect with a program called Shelter Plus Care, and which is for people with a disabling mental health condition. And so she, for the first time in a long time, is going to be able to afford. She is employed and is able to, and she has been employed. She's been working at temporary agencies, which is another trap that that many, many people who don't earn much fall into. She's been working that whole time she's lived in her car. She's been working, so that was a breath of fresh air to hear about her success, and really knowing that resource is very limited, but we need to spread the word that it is available for people. Shelter Plus Care.
Shelter Plus Care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to move. We have a little over 10 minutes left in the show, so we have a bunch to cover because we want to give our listeners a little information about some of the things that are going on in a positive light that begin to counteract some of these very, very negative trends that we're talking about. But very briefly now, and here's a challenge for our three guests, very briefly now, one of the things that we haven't addressed yet is specifically how are kids impacted in their schooling and social development when they experience homelessness at a young age?
Donna, you want to address
this
one?
I'll take that one if
okay.
I can. This is Donna. The national research says that with every school move a child makes, there's 4 to 6 months of lost educational progress. And so when you have a child who's moved several times during the year, whether it be from homelessness or high mobility related to military family moving or the parents trying to find work or housing, the child is losing educational progress, and it's just a matter of time before they begin losing not only their peer groups, but also their interest in education. And the more they feel that society is letting them down, the less they trust society, and often they're becoming the next round of homeless, unaccompanied youth.
I think with that, too, there are much greater health issues with mm-hmm. children and homeless families. I can't quote the number right now because I can't think of it, but it is startling the percentage of health issues that homeless kids have. Anxiety, depression.
Mm-hmm. Mental health.
Mental health.
And also physical.
Also physical health.
The risk factors increase. A lot of upper respiratory difficulties, stomach aches, a lot of anxiety that manifests. I would also like to say that we know that kids who change schools more than 3 times before they're in 8th grade or at least 4 more times likely to drop out of school. And what I do as the McKinney-Vento Act advocate, which is a federal law that ensures that children in homeless situations have free access to schools, and the responsibility for schools is to help them stay stable in schools, I ask the teachers, there are about 1,000 teachers in the Hillsborough School District, when I give trainings about poverty and mobility, I ask them, how many times did you move from age kindergarten through 8th grade? And it's surprising how many people remember. They know exactly how many times they've moved. And you can really see the spectrum of stability, and you also hear, like we did, a principal talk about when he was in 4th grade and his family lived in their station wagon. So I think any time we can increase and normalize talking about this reality for many of us, we can stop the stigmatizing of it and get more real about how we can help address it.
Now, again, with an eye on the clock, I'm going to, again, we have a great active listening audience here in the KWU community, and we like to inform our community. We also like to let people know what they can do to get involved. And there's three issues, and I'm going to go with each guest, focus on one issue, and just give people sort of a little update on what this solution is and how they might get involved. So first, I'm going to start with you, Suzanne. Talk a little bit about Bridges to Housing and that effort in the metro area.
I think Bridges to Housing is a wonderful effort between actually 4 counties in our area, and it was kind of jump-started by folks at City of Portland and the county. And it is an effort to address the needs of families, which is great. It is a program where we're looking at combining affordable housing with support services to support the family, as well as childcare to support the kids. And that we could look at something that Portland Impact does is working with families to stabilize and become self-sufficient. And it is it's a great program because it is trying to create resources in bringing all three things together: child care, services, and affordable housing. And in fact, the Multnomah County put in $1 million this year to start that project, so we can look at getting it going. It does identify folks with special needs, especially, and high resource using families. So families that are difficult to house, have many and complex barriers, lots of issues. And so it is a great first step and a good effort. And I think I'm very hopeful, actually. We are right in the process right now. The county is looking at how to get that money out to the families and how providers are going to work and housing partners are going to work together to start meeting some of those needs.
Is there anything that our listening audience can do to help promote this effort?
I think to remember that families tend to be somewhat hidden, homeless families. You don't see them, again, like you see the guys when you're getting off the freeway, you know, asking for money. You see single people a lot more than you see families. So the biggest thing is to recognize there is this huge need and to constantly kind of bring it up, talk about it. Do you have landlords that, you know, can rent to people? Do you know businessmen that, remember, there are families too? And I think we need to just continue to have the conversation and educate people that it's not just the single folks that are out there. It is the families, and you just can't see them the same.
Kristen, I'm going to switch gears here. This is like the speed round or something. Talk a little bit about the levy, and when is that up for vote, and how can voters in Washington County get more information?
Well, they can on many levels. One is if folks are members of congregations, part of the faith community, we have a group that was spearheaded by the Forest Grove United Church of Christ to bring people together, the faith community, to talk about the budget crisis facing the shelters and asking for congregations to do a special collection called Bridge the Gap. And then this money will go to the housing trust fund as a kind of a holding of the funds. Then the hope is to go to the county commission here in Washington County and say, this is what the community has been able to accomplish. Now, what will you offer? So they can go to their congregation and be part of this education about this resource that is being really threatened. Also, anyone who is a voter, we would like to encourage them to vote for the public safety levy that will be on the ballot in November. And if anyone wants more information how to be involved, let me get you the website. It's www.safecommunitysite.org. And that is that'll talk about the shelter network and the ways to get involved in the public safety levy passage.
Super,
yeah.
Super.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, Donna, if you could talk, I know that you've been tracking very closely this effort to get the federal government to expand their definition of homelessness. Could you talk a little bit about what's going on there?
Yes, there are two bills that are in Congress now related to the HUD definition. And one's in the House and the other's in the Senate. I'd like to point readers toward the NPAC report, the special edition that just came out that Jay was reading from earlier. And you can see for yourself and be outraged by yourself about some of the tactics that were used in Las Vegas and are also continuing to be used about narrowing the definition of homeless. The NPACH is the acronym, and it stands for National Policy and Advocacy Council on Homelessness. And their website's at www.npach.org. And look for the special edition that came out on June 7th for that complete piece. There's one here also by Barbara Duffield, who's the National Policy Director for another national association that deals more directly with education of homeless children and youth. And she's one of our heroes, one of the greatest spokespeople for education of this particular kind of kid. So I encourage people to look nationally to for some answers, and maybe talk to your own representative or senator about some of these issues.
I'd like to say that Barbara Dunfield participated in a conference I went to recently last week.
Care for the homeless.
Yes, which was wonderful. We'll be getting into that in future shows.
And we're also going to have to wrap up tonight. It's always hard when we have guests that are this good. Suzanne's giving me the finger. One more quick thing. We've got 30 seconds.
Well, if anybody would like to get more information and get involved with the Coalition for Homeless Families, I am the chair for that, and they could call me at 988-3660.
988-3660. 988-3660.
And if anybody wants to read about issues of poverty in Washington County, they can go to www.communityaction4u.org,
and you can download how poverty is impacting folks in Washington County.
Well, I'd like to thank all of you tonight, Suzanne, Donna, Kristen. We really appreciate the work you're doing in the community. Very briefly here, one last little action piece for you and our listening audience. If you got the Willamette Week today, you might have noticed that on the eighth page, there was an article called A Sweet Deal that highlighted a Portland Development Commission project that claimed to be affordable housing, but really
was
doing...
It's a boondoggle.
Yes, indeed. And what the Affordable Housing Now Coalition is asking folks to do is read that article, clip it out, and send it to the mayor. The mayor's considering taking some serious reform with Portland Development Commission, and I think send that article to him and say, Mayor, thank you very much for your efforts to reform PDC. We need to do that now, and we need to get real affordable housing here with public funds. So
make the 30% set aside of urban renewal money real for the people who need housing.
Yes, yes, in double DD. So for all of us here at Hole in the Bucket, thank you for tuning in. For those in our listening audience, thank you for listening to us tonight, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Have a good evening and stay tuned for DJ Audio and Nonstop Hip Hop.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, June 14th. Join the Bicycle Transportation Alliance staff and Portland bike lawyer Ray Thomas and learn how Oregon law applies to cyclists at the Bicycle Legal Clinic entitled Know What You're Talking About When You Talk About Your Rights. This event, free and open to the public, will be held tonight, 6 o'clock p.m. at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance headquarters. That address is 717 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. Learn about the two new laws affecting cyclists that went into effect.